97.5, The Fanatic.
Good morning. What's going on, Philadelphia? D-Line, I'm Joe Torti, 97.5, The Fanatic. Reunited, and it is so good. Dan Fritz producing the program. You know, Dan was here with me this morning, D, and we talked yesterday morning, and we talked a good amount about Ben Simmons. We talked a good amount about the Philadelphia Eagles, and one question kept coming up over and over again is where's D Lynam? So very excited that we got back together, D. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. I went down to Delaware to take in the Blue White game.
Yes,
you know it's a tradition. It's annual. Come on.
And as fate would have it, you know, before we get to the Eagles, some stuff emerged out of the Blue-White game that you would call somewhat newsworthy, right? It turns out that instead of the plan, according to a lot of Sixers fans who have called us, that Tyrese Maxey is the heir apparent to Ben Simmons, no matter what happens post-Simmons, you evaluate Maxey in the starting point guard role and then decide what you're going to do in the future. Doc Rivers says, not so fast, my friends. Nothing's going to be handed to Maxey outright.
Well, and I think part of it was I did come in here yesterday afternoon and I said I just had assumed Maxey was going to be that starting point guard. And from day one in training camp, he was running with the starters all the time. Now, in fairness, Doc did say we would probably see four different lineups in the four preseason games. Some of that could be because people are resting. And in the case of the point guard, you know, it's going to be between giving Shake and giving Tyrese. Now, each of them have gotten one start in the preseason games. And yesterday, Shake was in the starting lineup with the starters to start that Blue-White game. It seems that people don't want anybody but Tyrese Maxey in that role, unless somebody like Malcolm Brogdon comes or, you know, some other trade that could happen. if Shake is the one that's in there, and I think Doc just said right now he's surprised at defensively Shake is pressuring the ball and really is actually a step ahead of Maxey in what he's doing defensively. And because he's stretches the floor because of his shooting, he's a little step ahead in that regard as well. It's not going to bother me either way who's in that starting lineup, because I find great value to Maxey being coming off the bench. I just think his energy and his speed can be momentum changing, and I love guys like that. That's what Lou Williams was.
Sure, spark players.
Spark, yeah. And if Maxey can eventually be the same kind of instant offense that Lou was coming off of the bench, you know, there's a great value to that. But I think most people, they love Maxey. They want him to be that starting point guard. And I would just say, if he's not it at the beginning of the season, like, don't panic. The guy's going to be a starter in this league eventually. Maybe he's just not ready yet. And as I said, like, Jalen Hurts is growing as an individual, as a quarterback, an NFL quarterback, mm-hmm. with a team that also has to grow and improve.
Right.
I mean, you always want to improve. In Maxey's case, he's jumping into a lineup of four starters, returning starters, who were the number one seed in the East, who have aspirations of winning the Eastern Conference and getting to the NBA Finals. That's a lot different. Now, I went through a list of young point guards who had great success.
Sure.
A lot of them were drafted higher.
On growing teams.
Yeah. Right. I mean, but if we want to look like, say, a Derrick Rose.
Sure.
Mark Jackson, a Chris Paul. But who they were coming into the league is different than who Tyrese is.
Sure.
He had one college year we're talking about. So, and some of those other guys only had 1 year also, and they were young players. But, you know, like if Derrick Rose was drafted number one overall.
Right,
I'm not saying your draft spot necessarily has to impact it, but but when you're, you know, in the low first round, your immediate impact is not expected to be the same as somebody who's, you know, a top three pick.
And like you said, it's a combination of usually players thought of as quote unquote the best players go first. Yeah. And they go to teams that do not have situations that are quite like the Sixers situations.
Correct.
Usually. Yeah. And of course, we were talking about this off the air, D. Shake Milton finds himself in the uncomfortable position of being in the way of our baby And in this case, for a lot of Sixers fans, Tyrese Maxey is our baby, and nobody messes with our baby. No one is in the way of Tyrese Maxey, and all of his dreams are about to come true. And God help anyone who is in the way.
I mean,
unfortunately, that's shake right now.
And I think people were pleasantly surprised at shake coming on the scene, like from his rookie to his second year.
Yes,
because he spent that time down in the G League. Now he comes his second year, and you needed him.
Oh, yeah.
You needed, Ben got hurt, and now all of a sudden he's the enemy. And I find it on a list of four, I listed four possibilities of who could start. Who would you take to start on opening night, which is October 20th? So we're coming up on it fast.
Sneaking up, yeah.
And I put Tyrese, I put Shake, I put other, meaning you could trade for somebody between now and then, and I put Ben. Because Ben could come walking through the door.
At any time now, guys.
Because he doesn't want to miss a paycheck, Joe. And even with Ben on that list, Shake came in last.
Oh, Ben got more votes than Shake?
Can you believe that?
I'm saying, you don't mess with our baby. That's it. I'm just saying, you don't want to be that guy.
More than Mr. Simmons.
Wow. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to hop aboard the conversation. Eagles taking on the Panthers. We're going to get to that. The Panthers have been good this year. Sneakily good for a lot of people.
Gilmore's still not playing, right? Even though they have him?
I don't think so. I think he's got a couple more weeks left before the injury.
Because their defense is already good.
I agree.
Yeah.
And they supposedly also tried to
get
Jalen Smith. Yeah, exactly. So the Panthers... you might remember Matt Rhule and the Panthers as being the guys that drafted all defense the entire draft and trading for Gilmore, and they're trying to get Smith. I'm not saying that any one of those things individually is like the game breaker, but it's clear that there is a commitment to finding as much talent as you can on defense.
Well, the quote was, we want to win now. I mean, I don't know if bulking their defense is going to be the way they do it. I don't know if their 3-1 record is indicative of a really good team or, you know,
right,
part of it's who they've played. But as I always say, you can only do what you can against the opponent you're given in the moment. So you'll see.
So I think that there's a pretty clear plan for the Panthers that has taken like the last 2 years. I want to run this by you, and I also want to run this by Dan, who also pays close attention to the Panthers. It seems to me that the Panthers are trying to do what we talked about, building the race car, right? But putting together really good defense, having Christian McCaffrey be one of the top weapons, add wide receivers who are going to do damage, and find a quarterback who's not going to wreck everything. I don't know how in love they are with Sam Darnold, but I believe that they've identified Darnold, non-New York Jets Darnold, as a guy who is not going to try to do too much.
Capable.
And not going to wreck the whole thing if you build a really good team around him. Do you think that's a fair read for how the Panthers would put this together?
I would agree with that. The one stat with Darnold that I was interested in, tell me if I'm wrong, maybe it says something about their offensive line. He's been sacked 11 times in 4 games. That seems high.
He's been knocked around a little bit. Yeah. I think so. Dan, what do you think is the reason? Is it decision-making by Darnold? Is it the teams that they've played? Is it offensive line? What's the
I think, to be fair, it's a little bit of both.
Okay. Right.
Some of the decisions that Darnold has made, and then, yes, that offensive line. I mean, it's not horrific.
Right.
But as you guys just alluded to a moment ago, Sam's kind of gotten some good looks at the turf, but... Who knows? Maybe next year they draft all offensive linemen.
Maybe that's what they're an all or nothing team. There you go. So we were talking about this off the air too. McCaffrey banged up for tomorrow's game or today's game.
Yep.
What do you think? What's your gut reaction?
Well, when I came in yesterday, it seemed like he really wanted to play, and then he was listed as questionable on whatever Saturday's list that you call that. I think if it were him making the decision, I think he would be out there today. But as I said to you, their next game, which is at home against Minnesota, it seems to me if he waits, he will then have had 17 days of rest because it came in a Thursday night game, and that would be beneficial. And he's dealt with injuries the last couple of years. Now, they're not all related, he says.
Sure.
But he knows what this is like. And so I'm guessing we don't see him today.
I would kind of feel the same way, especially because Matt Rhule basically told the media, he said, I doubt that he plays.
Yeah.
You know, that could change, but I'm not into playing, like, the games about it. Like, that's what he said.
It was only Christian who left it open-ended because it sounded like he so wanted to play. But, yeah, everywhere else, it seemed like, you know, you'll be off for the day.
Right. 610-632-0975. Now, of course, I also have to check in with you, D. The college football slate was juiced yesterday.
Whoa. I mean, obviously, you got to start with the Alabama game.
Yes.
So I'm staying up. I'm watching. I must have fallen asleep. So I have to get up and see what the heck the final score was. Because Texas A&M was winning when I fell asleep.
Yes.
But it got very tight there, and they needed that. It was a game-winning field goal,
yes,
correct? Yeah.
That's correct.
That's what I missed.
Man, that's a shame, D, to put in all the time on that game and not get the payoff at the end.
I know.
Brutal.
Brutal is right, because that means I also fell asleep on the couch and my back hurts today.
Oh, jeez.
That one, Penn State, Iowa, I watched that.
Yes.
The end of that.
What a snoozer game that was.
Anybody check on Tyler lately?
Yes, yeah. I saw him. I kept one caller for him, and I said, Phil, please hang on. Tyler needs a friend right now.
And you know what? The sad thing is that Tyler saw it coming from like a mile away. He was like, I'm so disappointed that they have to play Iowa at Iowa as soon as they get into the playoff.
And remember how he said, you know, the 4 o'clock, so at least it's not under the lights. They have terrible.
Right.
Guess what? The lights went on at the end. Those last couple of minutes were played under the lights in Iowa. Ooh, you know, you see the storming of the field? That, I thought to myself, my son's not in college yet.
Right, yeah.
I'm going to just ask, don't storm the field. It was like so tight.
I mean, you hear people getting hurt all the time. Somebody got trampled storming
because
the field.
You tripping so, I mean, the massive just parade.
Surge of humanity, yes.
Woo. They were quite thrilled. That one.
Mississippi, Arkansas was incredible. 52-51.
And Oklahoma, Texas.
That was the game of the day.
55-48? No.
Yes,
yeah,
that's correct.
All these 50-point games, I have to keep them straight in my head.
And for those who didn't see that game, Texas was whooping that booty. Was absolutely destroying Oklahoma.
It came from 21 down.
Yeah. Switching quarterbacks in here, like Spencer Rattler comes out, Caleb Williams comes in, Rattler's coming back in to throw a 2-point conversion pass, and then it's looking like, by the way, in the last minute, they go back and forth, Oklahoma scores, then Texas scores to pull back to even after surrendering the lead. 10 seconds left, Oklahoma has like kind of an innocuous running play from just outside field goal range, they run it in for the score with 3 seconds left. Bananas.
It was crazy.
That was an awesome game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that it was a pretty good college football slate yesterday in terms of the games that were available. And in a rare moment, I thought the games lived up to them.
Oh, wait a minute. Insert the games that were available. Notre Dame, I could not see play Virginia Tech, was not on TV. It was on the ACC network.
That's what I was going to say. It sounds like an ACC network game right
ACC
there.
ACC network, and we don't get it. I don't even want to say the bill that you pay for the cable, and I don't get the ACC network.
Yes. Yes, indeed. It's,
Yeah, it came up when I, Notre Dame football, and it comes up in just a little slate next to whatever football game I was watching.
Yeah, it's like, hey,
gave
you want
the summary
score?
Or the score, the play-by-play, and then I can see highlights of previous games.
Did you mean
opponent.
Notre Dame against Virginia Tech from 2004? No! Why do I want to watch that?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's where we are.
The only reason I was interested, my niece is on the dance team of the Virginia Tech.
Oh, okay.
So occasionally, when they go to commercial, they'll show a close-up.
Dance team,
yeah, and
sure.
Then I say to myself, plus like half my family went down to go to the game just to experience what it would be like. What's that town? Blacksburg?
No. Yes.
Blacksburg, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Beautiful
so,
town.
They had a tailgate. They had to park their car by 11 a.m. yesterday. The game was at 7:30. I said, oh, my God, they'll all be asleep by end of the quarter, first quarter.
Well, so, you know, I'm used to that because, well, Fordham was terrible at football. They're good now. They were terrible when I was there. And my wife went to Delaware. And Delaware, she said that everyone, I said, was Delaware, you know, big sports there? She said, everyone was a big fan of tailgating. So you'd go and tailgate the game and then casually just drift away from the game afterwards because you're not really worried about them playing Villanova or George Madison or whatever in football.
Who won that one yesterday? That was Nova's ranked third.
They're third now?
Yeah. Well, that was yesterday.
Okay.
I don't know who won that game.
I thought I saw that they were winning.
And James Madison's ranked also.
Yeah, well, always. It ended up being a thriller. Nova won 28-27.
All right, there you go.
12 points in the third quarter for the comeback for Nova. And speaking of that, I had two college football games this weekend. I had a sprint football game, Penn and Cornell, on Friday. And D, when I tell you, at one point in the fourth quarter, if you're one of these poor Cornell sprint football players, you look up at the fourth quarter scoreboard, it's 56-0.
Oh my.
And you are facing, listen to this, D, I've never seen it before, fourth down and 61. I've never seen this before. Okay. So that game ends up being 63-0. Then Penn beats Lehigh in traditional football 20-0 yesterday. So that's 83-0 over the course of the last 2 days. I'm ready to see a visiting
Cornell
team score some points.
In both? No. Penn Lehigh,
the second game. Yeah, so rough. So some of the offenses are works in progress throughout college football at the FCS level and at the sprint level. But judging by all the 50-point games that we saw yesterday, FBS has their stuff figured out. Everything's cool at Ole Miss and Arkansas. But man, oh man, college football is absolutely jam-packed right now with good stuff.
If you were a player or a coach on Alabama, Nick Saban was going to ask you how you contributed to yesterday's result.
Accountability.
You had to be prepared to answer what your part in it was. I wonder if he was going to answer his part, too.
Yeah, man. And he's right in saying,
I get it, but that, come on, man.
That all of and I think part of it is because he said, like, all right, all of our goals are still in front of us. This is not going to stop us from. But I'm like, what is Alabama's problem with Texas A&M? Doesn't it always feel like whenever they play Texas A&M, they're in like a way closer game they should be, or they lose? I don't know.
I was actually, I mean, by looking at them, the fact that they're unranked, I don't know, they look more together and competitive than an unranked team.
Yeah. I mean, they've only lost two games.
Yeah. And it was the last two, and, didn't they have a quarterback get hurt? And now they're playing. Yeah, they did.
Because I trust you.
It's true. Two games ago. So maybe that contributed to the two losses. I don't know. Oh, because, yeah, the kid's a rookie. Or rookie, listen to me. He's a first-year quarterback.
Yeah.
And his previous two games, he had not played well. I don't know, a couple of the Alabama guys said that they had not practiced the way they should have.
Mm.
It's always funny, in hindsight, you can say that.
Right, exactly.
You didn't do what you were supposed to do.
In the moment, you're not able to nip that in the bud. We've seen college coaches start practice over, send people back into the locker room, say, all right, you know, the first 15 minutes
rewind of practice
has not worked. Yeah. We're going to try this again. 610-632-0975. Actually, sounds like something that would happen in New York Giants practice with Joe Judge, actually. Okay. Speaking of that, I wish that we were together yesterday because I know how, you know, much you just love absorbing stuff from the Philadelphia Inquirer about what's going on with all of the teams. The Marcus Hayes article on what's going on with the Philadelphia Eagles coaching staff. Did you have an opportunity to
Wednesdays,
check that out?
Right?
Yes.
The one where Sirianni lost it on his guys.
Yes.
Or at least that's how I'm paraphrasing.
He's talking about Jonathan Gannon doesn't have a scheme.
I got news for you. I should have rephrased it. I said that one of these three areas has to be different today in a big way. And I don't know which is the most important to having a good result.
Mm-hmm.
Penalties.
Absolutely.
I said your defense, but I should have said Jonathan Gannon.
Yeah.
And you got to run the ball more than you run it.
Yeah.
I mean, there has to be more rushing yards.
The three things that you just mentioned, D, don't sound to be individual fail, like player failings. It sounds like those are coach or structural failings.
I mean, if you want to, I would say the penalties have to be attached to the coach, even though I do blame players.
Yes, they commit them.
They
yes.
commit them, and, you know, you can self-discipline. I'm a big on that. I think you should be, you know, you know what you're supposed to do. Do your stuff. I mean, do that with your kids and their schoolwork. It's not for me to know what your homework is. You need to know
right.
your homework. So I do think that. But, I mean, the fact that in 4 weeks you have 44 penalties and your next nearest person is close to double digits behind you or next nearest team.
Right.
You know, I don't know. But you're right. That it would all be connected to coaching.
And, you know, it's I'm not saying that Nick Sirianni should know this either, but I think a veteran coach that has been through experienced teams and inexperienced teams would be able to say, okay, listen, being off timing or, you know, not being on the same page, these are quote unquote acceptable things that we'll understand are growing pains with young teams, but we are not going to be a team that commits penalties. We are not going to be a team that does this. I don't think that Nick Sirianni has the experience to have felt that out quite yet.
All right, maybe not, but now he is definitely responsible for not having an experienced guy on his staff.
Could not agree more.
I mean, when I remember Brett Brown's original staff were all, with all due respect, people I'd never heard of.
And sure.
I mean, I know a lot of people around the NBA just from being around it for a long time. And I remember saying, you know, wow, wouldn't you have wanted somebody who, because it was his first job.
Sure.
And he's like, who would want to sign up to develop these guys? We're trying to develop some talent because it was during the process.
Right.
And, you know, it's a revolving door of guys who basically might or might not even make it to the G League.
Right, exactly. And if they were somebody, you might help them win too many games, so you were out either way.
Either way.
Right.
So, but eventually, Mike D'Antoni.
An adult in the room.
And he was so grateful to be able to bounce stuff off of somebody who had been there, done that. And I just think it's so important. Mo Cheeks, when he was a first time
sure.
coach, he hired my dad to sit next to him.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, just a guy who had been around. And Sirianni is all young, in my opinion.
I'm not saying that Lane Kiffin was a great NFL coach, but hiring his dad, Monty Kiffin, who is both a really good defensive coordinator and another guy, a veteran, to be there. That's what you have to do. You said that when the whole staff was hired, D, it looks like it's like a frat house. It looks
exactly. Like I remember. I'm like, are you kidding me? Which is all well and good. I'm all for, but there needs balance. Man, you don't have balance with your passing and running right now, and you don't have balance with experience and inexperience. And you wonder why you're blowing up on your coaching staff. You really should point the finger at yourself for, you know, no, you didn't hire anybody with experience in really key spots.
When Howie Roseman is the elder statesman in the power group, you've got an issue. You've got a big time problem if that's the oldest, most veteran guy in your think tank. So they've got to get something together there for sure. But that wasn't surprising to me either, to see them blowing up on the coaching staff.
I mean, I don't know how Gannon feels. I don't know the guy at all. I don't know what his personality, if he would just, like, you know, roll off his back. But I'd feel some pressure going into Carolina.
Yeah, exactly. This is not going to be an easy team to deal with. And especially if McCaffrey doesn't play, I know that you can't control that. But if he doesn't play, everyone's going to be looking at you like, all right, well, Carolina better not do anything now. That's what the perception is yeah. going to be, fair or unfair. And Jonathan Gannon's going to have to deal with that.
I mean, fortunately, the other side of the ball played okay last week.
Yeah.
so you could. But now, again, they're going up. In the one article I read today, it said this would be their best defense they've faced this far this year. Would you agree with that? Atlanta?
Yes.
Then Niners, Dallas, and then Chiefs.
Yep. This is definitely the best defense.
So even though you might have had your a pretty good offensive output last week, minus taking three touchdowns back, you're going to face a tougher defense.
Here's your test. Yeah.
Here's your test.
610-632-0975. That's D-Line. I'm Joe Torti. We roll on until 8 a.m. right here on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
CSB.com. That's GoCSB.com.
Hear that? That's the sound of a family of four all working away on their devices.
Nice!
See, with Xfinity Internet, they now get Wi-Fi speed faster than a gig to handle all the homework, work, and streaming they throw at it. So no more arguments over who's hogging the Wi-Fi. Oh, my bad. Xfinity delivers faster Wi-Fi speed to handle a house full of devices. Can your internet do that?
Oh, yeah. Learn more about Wi-Fi speed faster than a gig and other fast speed options. Get started with Xfinity Internet now for only $29.99 a month with a special two-year rate guarantee and one-year agreement. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today. Requires paperless billing and autopay. Ends 10/11/21. Restrictions apply. New Performance Pro 200 megabits per second internet customers only. Equipment, taxes, and fees extra and subject to change. After term, regular rates apply. Gig Wi-Fi requires gig internet and XFi gateway. Actual speeds vary.
So then I dropped some garlic and croutons on there, and the rest is salad history. I made the best salad ever, people, and now I'm making the best app. The Caesar Sportsbook app got live in-game betting, parlays, and Caesar rewards. Caesar salad ain't got nothing on my app. Nothing!
Must be 21. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Download the Caesar Sportsbook app. Your app is ready, Emperor.
You're in a race against time, and the days aren't getting any longer. This fall, choose professionally powerful Echo outdoor power equipment to tackle the toughest cleanup jobs. Echo blowers, chainsaws, and string trimmers deliver industry-leading power to handle the tallest tasks in the shortest time. And time is running out. Visit echo-usa.com to learn more and find an Echo dealer near you. Echo. Power on and on.
Hey guys, it's Andrew, the Chewness, and I have a can't-miss lock for you this football season. It's my number one beer for tailgating, a hazy New England IPA called Pulp Daddy. Brewed by Greater Good Imperial Brewing Company, Pulp Daddy is a juicy IPA lover's delight with a citrus grove aroma and the nectar of the hop gods. Greater Good is nationally recognized as a top 20 craft brewery, and when you crack open a Pulp Daddy IPA, you'll see why it's my number one draft pick. You can find Pulp Daddy at many fine area bars and stores like Wegmans and Acme and distributed by Nebulous Beverages. Check out my beer for this football season, Pulp Daddy IPA.
Hey, how would you like to see what your custom landscape lighting will look like before it's installed? Hey, it's Mike Miss here for Farron Electric. Right now, you can get a custom landscape lighting design and a pre-installation preview from Farron Electric, so you know what to expect before the shovel hits the ground. Schedule your complimentary consultation with owner Dan Namoro at FarronElectric.com and ask about their no-hassle lifetime warranty on fixtures, bulbs, and transformers. Visit FarronElectric.com.
Tune into John Kincaid's Drive Around the League every Wednesday, presented by Tire Techs USA. $50 alignments, dealer quality service at a fraction of the cost.
Attention real estate developers! Bob Marino is at Spring Garden Lending, specializing in bridge and permanent loans to acquire, rehab, construct, and refinance investment properties. Spring Garden Lending, faster than a bank, less expensive than hard money lenders.
WPEN, Burlington, Philadelphia, a Beasley Media Group station, home of the most entertaining Eagles talking, Philadelphia, 97.5, The Fanatic. Philadelphia.
Welcome back. D-Line, I'm Joe Torti, 97.5. The Fanatic, rolling on until 8 a.m. Dan Fritz producing the program. Really quickly, before we get to the phones, I know David Nowen are holding. It's always interesting to me how news comes out and when news comes out, right? It seems like there's information on, say, NFL draft prospects that emerges on the night of the draft. And you think, there's no way that this was just discovered the night of the draft.
The digging happened long before.
I think it's fascinating that after Damaris Smith is retained as the head of the Players Association, the NFL Players Association, in an extremely contentious and split vote. It's very, like, not a unanimous thing at all. This story about John Gruden disparaging Smith in a 2011 email.
Yep. 10 years ago.
Comes to light. And now all of a sudden the conversation shifts away from the close split vote to what's John Gruden doing and what does this mean for him moving forward?
Well, and who was holding on to the email, and why would you hold, like, if it bothers you now, it should have bothered you back then.
Correct. And that's what I would say. It's why are we hearing it now?
Yeah.
It's still a big story if ESPN analyst John Gruden is saying these things, as opposed to Raiders head coach John
Gruden.
Right.
And at the time, he was at ESPN, but he thought, because there was, he thought the players weren't being directed in a good negotiating way.
Right.
And I don't know why he had such strong feelings about that. If you're not working for an organization, maybe he wanted to be working for an organization. Maybe he thought, it was, you know, no matter what he thought about the situation, that he didn't think the players were getting the right thing. The words that he used were wrong, god-awful wrong.
Absolutely. And the explanation wasn't any better either. We've seen enough explanations and apologies to know that they never work, no matter what you say anyway, right? Like, it doesn't seem like that. So if you made the mistake, I don't know what I would have told John Gruden to say.
I don't know that you can say anything that's going to help.
That's my point. It's like,
I mean, but you have to say something.
I guess so. I guess so.
And then you're just going to have to take your beating, because no matter what you say, it's just not going to make up for what you said.
Mark Davis said he called the content of the email disturbing and not what the Raiders stand for. Basically said, we're addressing the matter with Coach Gruden and we'll have no further comment at this time. Kind of what you'd expect the Raiders to hear. Not saying that the Raiders being a 3-1 team makes any impact on it, like, at all. Like, not to say that makes a difference. But you look at happening with Jacksonville and what's happening here. It's different situations, but also the teams are in different places as well.
But very different situations.
Clearly, yeah.
I mean, plenty of people have lost their jobs for making comments that are in the same realm of what Gruden did.
Yes. Yeah, that's the truth. So that is something that we're going to be watching. If only to see if anything comes of it at all. Because like you said, we have seen,
I mean, most of the ones that are coming to my mind, though, are all media related.
Right. Well, at the time, it's a media personality,
right,
at the time.
But he doesn't work for that company. So it's not ESPN that would be reprimanding.
It's true. Yeah. It'd be up to the Raiders or the NFL.
Right.
As it were. But yeah.
And yet they would be making it based on him working in another entity at that time. But now they're the ones to be the judge and jury of it.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
It's a little complicated.
And in some cases, I actually think that there is a valid defense in some cases to say it's really hard to hold somebody to 2021 standards in 2003 or whatever. This is not one of those. Like, this situation, there's no time period where John Gruden would just say, hey, everybody talked this way. Like, no, this is not something that John Gruden's going to skate on in that area. So,
and honestly, when you read it, to be, how are you so angry at an individual who it doesn't even seem like he knew that well.
Right.
You know what
and
I mean?
And it doesn't, like, not that you should say it either way, but it doesn't really affect you. You know, like, whatever's going on with the, it's not really.
I guess I would need to know, where was the anger coming from that it was so specific
right.
towards Smith?
Yeah, exactly. So that was the other thing that came out yesterday.
Well, keep an eye on both of them.
Yeah, we'll monitor. We'll see what happens. David in Maryland's next on The Fanatic. David.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, David.
By the way, I want to apologize to Dan, your front guy. He's very nice. We're having problems with weather in Maryland, and I can't control the rain. So let me apologize to begin with.
Understood, yes.
I have a funny comment about the end with Gruden, but I want to share something. I think the Eagles win today. I think the fact that that running back is not going to play for Carolina, and I would expect that the defense, having had their ears rung in a meeting by the head coach, may be reacting constructively. I hope so.
I don't know that it works that way at the pro level.
You're right, Dickie. But let me leave you with two, because I know you're very busy. I got a call late last night from a woman who used to teach English at Penn. And she interviewed Lucy Lee at the practice tee because he's a huge fan of hers.
Wow.
Lucy asked the older reporter who used to teach at Penn, can you tell me where I should stay in Philadelphia? I'm going to be doing personal appearances there in the spring.
Nice. Where
I
did
thought
you?
We'd all find that interesting. You know, by the way, let me tell you my John Gruden story.
Okay.
I happened to be on the advisory board of the Eagles when I first started to teach at Penn under Braman. I liked him. I know other people didn't. But there's a great story about Gruden sitting in his office, Joe, and you would love this, as would you, Dee? And all of a sudden, he hears a rumbling above him in the ceiling, and a 4-foot white rat landed on him.
Oh, God.
Isn't life funny? You'll have a great day. God bless you.
Thanks, David. Same to
Whoa.
You.
Ugh.
The rat?
I might not recover if that happened to me.
No, like, look, my wife is like, if we find a rat, it's the rat's house now. It's time for us to move. Like, the rat has won.
Ugh.
Falls out of the ceiling.
Well, that was the bet for you.
Yeah, I mean, there you go. 610-632-0975. The ever interesting Dave. Let's go to Alan in New Jersey next on The Fanatic. What's up, Alan?
Joe and Dee, how are they?
Hi, Alan. It's been a while. How are you?
Been a while. You're exactly right. And just wanted to say that the old 83-year-old guy, it's tough getting up early in the morning, but I feel better some weeks when I have the same amount of tackles as Fletcher Cox and Kerrigan. You know, it sort of does something. And then last week I had the same punting average as both punters in the game. You know, so I'm trying to think positive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, you're both
doing all right there.
Both top
then,
of your field. That's
yeah.
exactly right, Alan.
Yeah, I had a great delight watching the end of the Alabama game last night where they got beat. I don't know if you guys probably went to bed earlier.
No, but, I said to Joe, I was invested, and then I fell asleep, and I had to wake up and see what the heck happened.
It was great because the Texas A&M quarterback got drilled with like 3 or 4 minutes to go in Sternum. They put him in the tent. He came back out like a warrior and won the game, and it was just fantastic. And you know, I like to see the underdog win here or there.
Yeah, well, that was, I think, snapped 100 straight games that Alabama had beaten an unranked team.
Opponents, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think it's the first guy who was ever an assistant coach under Saban.
Yeah, that beat him also.
Beat him, whatever. Yeah. But I want to sneak something else in here, like talking about Alabama. A couple of weeks ago, I got up for a couple of minutes and was listening. And Joe, at the end, we were talking about, like, maybe you're talking about Mac Jones, but the sometimes non-too-great pro careers of Alabama quarterbacks.
Sure, yeah.
And the old guy here right away, honest to God, in my foggy state, said to myself, how about Mr. Starr?
Yeah, right.
Mr. Stabler and Mr. Namath.
I'll tell you what, there was a golden age. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not all about, Jake Coker and Bryce Young. There were some players back in the day. No doubt.
Yeah, I just popped in there, whatever. But I just wanted to say hello again. I hope you guys are doing well. And don't forget, D.
Yes.
Hit it right down the middle.
Yes, sir.
Far away.
12:30. I'll be on the first tee.
Thanks, Alan. Appreciate it. And not often. That's the other thing. Yeah. Down the middle, far away.
He introduced me to a Bing Crosby song that's about golf, and that's what he was singing.
That's the one. There you go. Mm-hmm. Alan's got a little bit of a voice on him too. It's not too bad. We had back to back D Lineham calls, right there.
Well, I had to laugh when I had him over here. He's like, he literally goes, oh, I just woke up for a little bit, wanted to say hi to D and Joe, haven't talked in a while, and I'm going back to bed. I wish I had that morning, because that was just brilliant.
That's absolutely fantastic. Although, that's not far off of what D's going to do. She's going to go home, you take a little nap before golf.
Tomorrow's a holiday. I don't have to teach tomorrow. Fall break, which used to be a week. This time, it's only 2 days.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go.
Still makes tomorrow a holiday.
That's it. That's all it is. That's awesome. Rajab in Bristol's next on The Fanatic. What's up, Rajab?
Hey, what's going on? How you guys doing this morning?
Excellent.
Great. So, I've been kind of theorizing, specifically these last couple games, and I've been really puzzled, like, why isn't it that the Eagles are not running the ball? Like, there have been times throughout the years we've seen where they've gotten away from the run, but there was a presence of the run. But after watching that Dallas game, and I didn't watch last week's game, but to my understanding, there was still very little running. And I feel they've got Jalen Hurts out there just chucking the ball down the field, and it's making no sense. Now, my theory is that this is because of Howie Roseman and Jeff Lurie. Now, I had read a report during the offseason that apparently they were complaining, or basically they wanted to see the ball in the air more. So now that this guy Sirianni comes in, like, the first game, I actually was like, wow, this is great. Like, I saw a balance. I saw a pass. And then when the second half came, I saw them running the ball. I was like, wow, this is like, you know, I've never seen this before. And then the next couple of games, it was like they just went completely away from the run. I mean, we have Miles Sanders runs the ball 3 times in one of the games, and it's like he breaks off a 24-yard run. So you would think they give it to him again. Nope, they go right back to the pass. So I'm just wondering, what do you guys think about this, the total annihilation of the run game and the playbook? Because it seems like it's just not making any sense to what we saw in week one and these last couple of games where the run game is just completely non-existent.
Yeah, it's so funny that you brought this up, Rajab, because I was talking about this with actually a college coach and somebody who's been attached to pro programs as well. And the way that we were talking about it is that there is a power struggle that coaches have internally all the time between knowing that running the ball is a really good way of doing things and just knowing that the risk of passing the ball can pay off in so many different ways. And the Eagles have been grappling with this for a long time. You've seen when they've been committed to running the ball, they've been successful, but there have also been times where they hit on super long plays. They complete 6 passes in a row and move right down the field, things like that. The coaches are constantly at war with themselves, trying to force themselves to run the ball more, when it is so much more fun and sometimes effective for these coaches to pass. It was a very candid, like, interesting conversation. And I do wonder how often this even happens at the NFL level, where we think that these guys are absolutely perfect in terms of their analytics and if they're going to execute whatever the best strategy is at any given time. Do you think that applies to the Eagles, that they just fall in love with the pass because of the risk-reward factor in the modern NFL?
I don't know. I'm just going to go by the fact that they have one win. In that win, they carried the ball 31 times.
Yes.
Since that win, over the last 3 games, they have 60 total carries, period.
Yeah.
Period. So, and they're not the worst in terms of rushing. Right. I'm actually surprised on the who is. Steelers.
Well, they don't have any kind of offensive line. So that would make that would make some sense, I guess.
They've only carried the ball 66 times.
Haven't even tried.
Whoa.
Woof.
But the Eagles are tied for 6th from the bottom.
Okay.
And if you take away week one, I'm just saying they'd be probably closer to where the Steelers are.
Yep, you're probably right about that.
So I would say that you can fall in love with the pass, but it's like not having the jump shot. I can sag off of you now because you're never, ever going to shoot it.
Right.
I know that. And so it takes away a dimension of the game that's it's silly. It seems to me you're shooting yourself in the foot.
Well, and so here's what my problem is. Let's say that you don't have Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or some quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, you have complete and utter faith in their ability to move the ball down the field only passing, right? Like, if you have Jalen Hurts and you're still evaluating, you're still figuring things out, you want to put Jalen Hurts in the best positions possible. I would rather the Eagles run the ball twice for 2 yards on first and second down. You have a third and six, and that's the throw that Jalen Hurts has to make, mm-hmm. or he can scramble to pick it up, versus an incompletion on first down, then a one-yard run or an incompletion. You're in third and nine. It's a completely different deal.
You're not setting yourself up for short yardage on third down, to be honest with you.
Exactly. And so people look at third down conversion rates as like, well, do you have third down and nine to convert all the time, or do you have third down and three to convert all the time?
And by the way, when I'm saying they have 91 attempts on the ground, 34 of them are by Jalen Hurts.
Hurts, exactly.
So he's only three behind Miles Sanders. Miles has 37. And I can't, with this particular, I'm sure I could find somewhere where it would take that away, all quarterback runs.
Right.
You know, because like we mentioned, Lamar would be a higher number.
Yes.
I thought Kyler, but I was wrong on that one.
So we were talking off the air about quarterbacks that have...
Oh, that was off the air?
I thought it was, yeah. 1,000 yards and 150 rush yards.
Yeah, because Jalen is one of them.
He's one of them, yes, exactly.
And he has 226 yards on the ground.
Yeah, he's running the ball a lot.
Yeah.
And well, I would say.
Yeah.
And Daniel Jones is the other one. It's Lamar and Jalen Hurts and Daniel Jones.
And I said Daniel Jones because he's running for his life.
Yeah, you've seen that a lot. It's another 1-3 team, the Giants. 610-632-0975. Todd in Allentown is next on The Fanatic. Good morning, Todd.
Hey, good morning, guys.
How are you?
Good. I'm great. One quick Eagles point. I'm not an Eagles fan, but I do watch them. And your city is awesome, by the way. My wife and I were just there last weekend, and we had a great time, and we decided to stay an extra night.
How about that? Nice. Glad to hear it.
We did not go to the game, but we were in this Irish bar at the beginning of the game, and we had a great time. And then the Packers came on, and we watched that till halftime, and then we went back to the hotel. Anyway, great city. I think you guys, your city, not my city, your city gets a bad rap. So that's thing number one. Thing number two, and I think one of you two guys were talking about, is it lack of run? Is it defense? Is it penalties? Okay. So, from the time I was 5 to about 35, I played soccer and then I coached soccer. Penalties are a result of one of two things. One, you aren't tall enough, quick enough, good enough. That's why you commit penalties. Or, and as you coach for a long time, you are making mental mistakes. I think the Eagles, who are, I think, the most penalized team right now.
They are 44, Tampa Bay second with 34.
Okay, so you don't have the personnel. So I used to love when I played to play like in the mud and the slop and stuff like that, because the bigger, stronger, faster guys than me, it was like an equal playing field.
Yeah, but, neutralized it.
Yes, exactly. But if I know the guy I'm supposed to cover or watch or whatever, and he was just bigger, stronger, faster, I had to foul him, right? So I think that a lot of their penalties are due to personnel, only because you don't have the ability to catch up or get to where you're supposed to be, just because they have more skill than you.
Instead of getting beat, then you're getting whistled.
You're getting right. So I just want to hear your answer on that, because that's how I played, because I wasn't always the biggest, strongest, fastest on the field. And when I was coaching, I would say, listen, just slow them down. But if you're going to slow them down at midfield. Slow them down.
Right.
Not in our third of the field, their third of the field.
Makes sense, Todd. Thanks for the phone call.
I would just say, when you are of smaller size, lesser talent, lesser foot speed, whatever is, yeah. You're the lesser, there are tricks of the trade.
There are. That's true.
And if you, I'm pretty sure that I feel like he's giving them too much of a free. I get that it worked for him, and I understand what he's saying. I can't say not 44 times, 10 more than anybody else in the league. I can't say it's just because your personnel isn't good enough.
So there are some situations, right? Like holding's better than the sack every time.
Okay.
Holding is always better because you lose the down, your quarterback gets hit, whatever. But that's not every time. It's not Derek Barnett losing his mind and getting penalized every single time.
And in Barnett's case, he has a reputation and a history.
Exactly.
Where the history comes with the reputation.
In the NFL, committing pass interference doesn't pay because it's a spot foul now instead of 15 yards. In college football, it absolutely pays. Don't give up a 60-yard bomb. Like if you can take the guy down and have it be 15 yards, so be it. But I do think that Todd's right in some cases where it does make sense. It's the lesser of two evils. But I agree. I'm with you. I'm with you that that's not the majority, I would say, of Eagles penalties.
Correct.
At this point.
Yep.
610-632-0975. Ryan, Andrew, we're going to get to you guys next. It's D-Lineham and Joe Torti on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.